Verulam Sports.
Hello again and welcome to Verulam Sports Podcast with your host, Tony Rice. And we are joined now by friend of the show, John Meredith. John Meredith is one of the superstars over at the wonderful Batchwood Tennis and fitness facilities, really. We're very lucky to have that in our doorstep. He's also our tennis guru and all kinds of tennis action, of course. Not long now to Wimbledon, but it's just happened in Paris, hasn't it? The Roland Garros is completed. We'll unpack it all with the ace man, John Meredith. But John, before we go down the tennis route, I know, you know, I'm a fan of sport generally. Little football events are happening at the moment. So what have you made of England's opening salvo?
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching it on Sunday. It was a really good game. I mean, it was a little bit of a knife edge, wasn't it? With just one goal, but some really good performances there. And Southgate stuck to his guns with his, you know, decisions going against the grain a little bit and proved right. I thought Calvin Phillips was excellent. Sterling was excellent.
Yep.
Trippier, you know, who came in on the wrong side of, you know, his usual side was great. And yeah, look forward to the next game. And yeah, great. To give everyone a bit of a pick-me-up, isn't it, in these different times?
They are different. They are challenging. And job done from England. I've got to be honest with you. Professional performance. Congratulations to all involved. The job, as we know, is far from done. The Scots come to Wembley on Friday this coming. So that's going to be a juicy one. I'm still not sold, though. I'm a pint half full, John. Don't get me wrong. I'm a pint half full kind of a guy, but I'm still not convinced. You know what? Just saying this much, just quickly, before you roll down the tennis road. I want a space for Jack Grealish. I really do. I thought it was quite compelling that Sterling goal came and the energy levels, I thought, palpably lifted when that young Aston Villa star began warming up a little bit. I'd like Grealish in my team. Just my thoughts.
Yeah, I think he's a great player. Foden was very good at the start of the, you know, we've got some, I think, you know, best squad we've had in a long time, certainly midfield and up front. But yeah, Grealish is good, but he's a little bit sort of, he hasn't really yet delivered on the big stage. And I think Sterling, I think he's the most capped player Southgate had, and he's never let him down. And people question his club form, but Sterling said himself in the interview afterwards, there's many reasons, you know, there seems to be something perhaps going on there. So I think he got it right. I think he'll change the team for Scotland, freshen it up, you know, and I think he went with experience in the first match.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, you can't fault it. England's first win in now 10 opening European tournament play. So breaking the booking, that trend, which is positive. Scotland come to town. Scotland, of course, lost to the Czech Republic. Nevertheless, though, there was sporting more glory for the Czechs, wasn't there, over at Roland Garros. Barbara Krejčíková claims a maiden Grand Slam win, 6-1, 2-6. 6-4, she prevails against Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, the Russian. So, yeah, exciting times. And, yeah, celebrations all around for the Czech from a sporting perspective.
Yeah, I mean, Krejčíková, she's, I'm involved in tennis heavily. She's not one I've greatly heard of before. You know, I know she's won sort of slams at doubles on the ladies' side. Pavlyuchenkova, I have heard of when I was out at the French Open. She was world number one in the juniors when I was there, you know, must be 10 years ago. She was one sort of touted to do big things. So I would have thought she would, you know, when I was even looking at the semifinals, be the favourite. But fair play to the lady. I think she's 25, which is, in, you know, not young to win a first Grand Slam now. So she's obviously kept believing and brilliant for her.
John, I'll tell you what I really like about this as well, because, you know, we're going to talk about Djokovic. We have been, I think, blessed with what an era of tennis at the elite level at this moment in time that we've lived through. But I think important for all sport, I think it gets neutrals involved, is when there is this unpredictability. And I just think that's so good. I mean, check this out. Only one top 10 seed from the women's side made it into the quarterfinals. So all the big names fell by the wayside, and that represents an opportunity, doesn't it, for other talent to seize the moment. And again, for me, I think that's quite good for the sport of tennis in the bigger picture.
Yeah, definitely. I think what COVID has done, it's sort of slightly pressed a reset button on some of the, you know, on the tour in a sense. Mm. So some of the players have been used because, you know, for example, even on the men's side, the tour race starts again every year. Mm-hmm. Some of the men have been playing more than others. Obviously, some having to isolate and so on. So it's sort of it's put more variables into the mix. And also, I suppose some of the old, you know, the sort of big names like Serena Williams are just that year older, which is starting to make a difference now. Clay's never really her surface because of the mobility side of things.
John, you're dead right on that. Just quickly on Serena. Again, she's so tantalisingly close, isn't that precious number of 24. Wimbledon coming up, we'll build to Wimbledon. For you, John, would Wimbledon, more of her natural surface, perhaps represent her best chance of becoming a history maker?
Yeah, I would say any of the faster surface. So to be honest, Wimbledon or the US Open, I'd probably say, you know, ironically, I think that the hard court's actually faster than the grass these days. That sort of myth of grass being the fastest, I don't think that's no longer the case. But yeah, I mean, anything where the rallies are short and she can get on top in the points and, you know, be the aggressor, and that harder for the opponent to turn around is her better opportunity. So I'd say the French is definitely her least likely event.
Great opportunity, though, it was, wasn't it? And credit to the Czech Republic's 25-year-old Barbara Krejčíková, who claims victory, a maiden slam. And of course, again, only one top 10 seed made it to the quarters. Congratulations for her finding the way to prevail. Just quickly on Serena Williams, because one of the areas of controversy, I had a very fascinating chat with the team over at the Ollie Foundation doing great things to raise awareness and support of suicide issues, et cetera, was, of course, one of my favorite female players, Osaka, announcing that she wasn't really, didn't want to talk to the media and subsequently dropped out of Roland Garros. She announced on Instagram that really she's been suffering from anxiety and depression post that 2018, I think it was actually a win over Serena Williams, where she was the pantomime villain, wasn't she?
Yeah.
I think it's important because, you know, I don't necessarily think that the way that was managed at the end of that was a positive reflection on how we had ought to be more understanding of the pressures and challenges of, you know, the tour imposes psychologically on the stars. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. I think first of all, no matter how successful, how much money you got in life doesn't protect you from these sort of issues. Everyone's human. And I think that's point number one. I was reading something that Andy Murray on the BBC website just today, and he pointed to the fact he feels it's probably something's gone wrong in terms of communication between her and the tour, because he felt that if he'd have mentioned something like that to the tour, that he was suffering with depression and so on, then the tour would help. Mm. So something's gone wrong in terms of communication on this matter.
Good ambassador as well, isn't he, Andy Murray? Because he's been outspoken in his support of the female game consistently in his career. Of course, he's a multiple slam winner himself, so he oozes credibility. So it's interesting there to see that he offers that mediation voice there. That's quite compelling.
Yeah, he's very good like that, isn't he? I mean, he's a very astute guy, isn't he? And so I think, I mean, I don't know factually, but sure. I think, you know, I don't know if she approached the tour and said this is something she was struggling with, or if she just said she didn't want to do it and didn't really sort of fully open up to the extent of things. It seemed to me that came out afterwards.
Sure.
But yeah, like I say, you know, we live in I think these people are even more in the spotlight now, and with social media and so on. And I mean, you could say we don't have to have social media, but they're very, very, you know, even more so in the public eye, find it harder to escape it. And I think if you develop it, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, people develop mental health issues. And they need to be taken seriously.
John, you're dead right. And I think you've really addressed that powerfully. I would suggest before we just move on, if you're listening to this and want to learn more, because again, not everybody can be an elite level tennis player or superstar. And, you know, goodness me, that's why they're called elite. But again, as John references, this can apply to you. There's lots of great information in that podcast I shared with the team over at the Ollie Foundation. So I'd recommend, after enjoying John and I continuing our tennis conversation, that you do check that one out again. Seriously, don't hide away, don't shy away. There's no shame at all in seeking support when and if required. John, just finally on this final point, before we focus back in on the great action that was the French Open, the only thing I would come back to you with regards to this, I thought again, just compare and contrast the reaction to the great Federer, the greatest Federer, for me, aesthetically, the most pleasing tennis player I've ever witnessed. He is astonishing to me. You know that, that Panther movement, there is, at the moment, level with Nadal, statistically no greater as well, right? So I'm in awe of the man. What I thought was a little bit interesting was obviously after he prevails against German in round three, he's clearly micromanaging his body at this time. I respect that. He took the decision that then he was physically unlikely to be able to get as far as he wanted. I think he's got an eye on Wimbledon. And then, you know, bows out of the tournament. Two things on that. I think the reaction for that physical decision by the great Federer versus the psychological decision from the likewise immensely talented Osaka were worlds apart. I just wonder if you think I'm being a little bit oversimplistic in that analysis there.
Well, you mean in terms of the reaction and the press and so on?
In terms of, let's consider the management of it and the response.
Federer was quite criticised, wasn't he? And the reason that was, usually what these players do, for example, if they do very well in a certain tournament, they pull out of the next tournament, saying simply they need the rest or they don't need to play it. So what they tend to do is tell a white lie, really, and say they're injured. Mm-hmm. And I think he was a little bit too honest in his own appraisal because, look, I mean, he's had two knee operations. He's 39. He's not going to win the French Open. That's the reality. And it was about getting matches under his belt. So he was very honest with that. But at the same time, if you say that, it opens yourself up for criticism. If he had said, my knee is, you know, I'm struggling with my knee, I've had two surgeries, everyone would say, oh, he's injured, and that would have been the end of it. So I think he's a little bit honest in his, do you know what I mean, in the way
John, I'll tell you what I really admire about you, many things. You're a good man, bottom line. But you are an honest gentleman. I'll tell you what, it's a gift, actually, in our world at this moment in time. But there we go. Nevertheless, I think the other bit of criticism, it shouldn't necessarily be about money, but of course, money matters, doesn't it? Everything has a cost. And I think there was a school of thought levied against the great Federer that, arguably, given that he is, as you say, 39, micromanaging his body at this stage of proceedings, as he must, I get that, that potentially the German that he's overcame in that third round, if he'd made that decision early in the piece, would have had the walkthrough and then an extra paycheck. Potentially, you never know, you look, you know, could have won the whole thing.
Well, he wouldn't have won the whole thing, to be honest, but you're absolutely right. So what that's done is, I don't know, which round was it? Which round was it?
Federer won in round three, then passed out, walked away round four. So it was the third round.
So you're probably talking to this, to Struff, I think his name was. You're probably talking about the difference of £50,000.
Yeah.
Or maybe more, this sort of thing, if you look at the difference between those two rounds. So absolutely, that was where the criticism come in, that if he knew he wasn't going to play, what he's done, he's robbed this guy of the opportunity. And is it a good enough reason to pull out just because you've got to manage your body?
Yeah.
You know, as I say, most of the players, they just say, I'm injured. That's what they say. And nobody, you don't open yourself to that criticism. They don't tend to do it in Grand Slams, you know, because for most of them, it's the be all and end all. But you get it why Federer's done it. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those, I just think he should have probably just said, look, my knees, you know, I've got a problem with my knee and I'm injured. And then that would have been the end of it.
Tell you what's fascinating, though. I love the fact you brought it up there that for most people, and most neutrals, myself included, the Grand Slams are what it's all about when it comes to tennis. And the man who did win that men's title, Novak Djokovic, claiming then his 19th, his second French, on course perhaps, in so doing, actually, became the only the first man all time, including Federer, including Nadal, etc., to win all four Grand Slams twice since the Open era began, 68. Tough challenge, though. Super Pass, I thought, looked very good. The Grecian, 22-year-old, new young talent. Yeah. What's your thoughts on that final, John?
I think that even at two sets to love, you can't rule Djokovic out. It seems to me that the bigger challenge he's faced with, the more he relishes it. Mm. It's crazy, isn't it? So I felt like even at two sets to love, it was far from over.
Yeah.
That Djokovic is always, you know, he's superhuman in that he's always capable of turning something around. You know, for me, he's been the dominant player of the last 10 years. I think Federer won the majority of his Grand Slams previous or prior to that. You know, and you're now looking at it that in general, Nadal tends to, you know, last few years, dominant on the clay, whereas Djokovic was dominant on the rest. So now he's won the French again. He's odds on favourite for Wimbledon and the US Open.
Yep.
And I don't, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he does it. Really wouldn't be surprised if he does it.
John, you and I have spoken about this for a while because, again, I come back to certain standards and certain principles. For me, I'm always a Federer man, just aesthetically. I just could watch that man play tennis for a million years. It's like, for me, as if you're watching Picasso draw, you know? But I think Djokovic doesn't seem to get that crowd respect that he's surely due now, because the facts don't lie. The age is on his side. The momentum's on his side. He's only one away. If he wins Wimbledon, he levels up with Nadal and Fed. I think he's going to get the dominant one. I think he'll be the number one. Those facts don't lie. He will have to be considered, surely, the greatest.
I think he will go on to beat the record. I think he will end up winning more slams than anyone else and will be the GOAT, as it were. Mm-hmm. But then the other side of it is popularity.
Uh-huh.
And I saw something funny the other day, and it sort of highlighted it. The world's most popular tennis players. It said 1, Federer.
Yep.
2, Nadal. Yep. 3, anyone who's playing Djokovic. So I really like... I love his tennis, and I think his level is higher than anyone else's, and his normal level is higher than anyone else's. He's probably mentally the strongest, but, you know, the fact of the matter is he's not as popular. I mean, you look at Nadal, he's very, very humble. He says all the right things.
Well, he's got that matador quality, doesn't he? And also those idiosyncratic kind of things as well. And let's not forget, of course, that family lineage with that Barcelona great and his uncle.
Yeah, I think it's more what he stands for when he's been interviewed.
Yes.
He never makes up excuses. Yes. He says, you know, after Djokovic beat him, he said, I lost to the better guy on the night. It's just a tennis match. He says all the right things. Mm-hmm. You know, Djokovic has an edge. You know, it doesn't make him a bad guy, but he has an edge. Federer, you know, people love him. He's Federer. He's the classical artist, the traditionalist. And Djokovic, he's had some off-court controversies, which I shouldn't say on the radio, over the years. A lot of people, you know, he's perhaps been a bit naughty off the court over the years, which people don't like. That's how I see it.
The bottom line is, I'm sure Djokovic is very much at peace with himself, comfortable in his sitting, and I'm sure his bank manager loves him to boot. And living the dream is going to become the most dominant tennis player. Statistic, I can see it happening. Perhaps level it up at Wimbledon and then beyond. Who can bet against him? Just stylistically, Djokovic, John. For me, what I really admire about Djokovic is that I consider him almost to be the perfect hybrid of that artisan Federer and that kind of matador that is Nadal. Of course, Nadal is maybe the most supreme clay court player of all time. Now, Djokovic claims his second Roland Garros just last weekend. Like I say, I see him as almost that fusion between these two great polarities. Is that a bit, again, simplistic? I'm not a tennis coach or a tennis player.
Well, the only way I can sort of see it is that Djokovic flows very well like a Federer, and his movement's quite light like a Federer. And Nadal's, you know, really sort of pounding the court and very, you know, aggressive in the sense that he muscles the ball and is very, very physical. And Djokovic, in between those elements, you know, he's obviously, you know, his serve's probably bigger than Nadal's. They say Nadal's forehand's the biggest shot on tour, particularly on clay. But, you know, to be honest, Djokovic was all over that on Friday. And I even felt that when Nadal was 5-love up in the first set, and then it quickly went to 5-3, that Djokovic had that extra level in him on the night that Nadal didn't. And I still see it that way. I think, you know, Nadal's 35. He's had a fair few injuries. He's a bigger, heavier guy. Yep. You know, still an amazing athlete, but different type of athlete. Whereas, you know, Djokovic is sort of sinewy and wiry, Mr. Flexible, super coordinate, you know, amazingly sort of smooth and fluid, like a Federer in that sense. Whereas Federer is the ultimate classicist, isn't he, of his single-handed backhand. But these guys, I think, you know, these guys are hitting it bigger than Federer, you know, I mean. And I think it's slightly moved beyond him. I mean, just the stats that I think he won the Australian Open about 3 or 4 years ago, Federer, and that was the first one he'd won in a number of years.
I think maybe the best days of all of those, Nadal, Federer, the current number one equal, is probably fading, but what an era, truly what an era we've been privileged to witness. Just quickly before we move things on and talk all things Batchwood and just a brief summation or preview of Wimbledon, can you just give me your insights into young Tsitsipas there? We referenced him, 22-year-old, again, as you say, was two sets up, again, not necessarily bossing the game, but, you know, two sets up against the great Djokovic. Good for your sport once again that this young superstar, just 22-year-old, the world at his feet, definitely a major winner in my head. Your thoughts on that young man's future?
Yeah, I mean, he's been knocking on the door for quite a while now. I think he either won or got to the finals of the ATP Tour Finals at the O2, was it last year or the year before? He's touted as a, you know, next world beater, with a few others, like a Dominic Thiem, who's dropped off a little bit. Zverev's been there for ages, not quite pushed through. So clearly he's got it within him. I wouldn't have necessarily thought that clay would have been his, you know, best surface to do that on. The others are 34, 35 and 39. So what you give that a couple of years, this guy's still 24, 25. Yep. It will be a bit more of an open playing field in a year or two's time, I think. Perhaps 2 years.
Absolutely. But again, credit to him. And I really like the fact that he actually paid homage to his grandma passing away just moments before the final got underway. I foresee great things for that young Greek man. John, before we build to Batchwood, which is always one of the shining lights in the Hertfordshire sporting facilities, we're really lucky to have it here. Just want to get your views quickly on Wimbledon, because I mentioned, for me, huge fan of tennis, your wonderful sport, but it really gets on my radar for the four slams. I think for your average person, your average Brit, tennis really gets onto the radar for real for that wonderful 2 weeks, beginning the 28th of June to the 11th of July 2021, Wimbledon. Just briefly, what can we look forward to this Wimbledon time, do you think?
Well, first of all, I think the finals are going to have a capacity crowd. I think I read that today. Yep. So that's going to be an occasion that we used to take for granted, but will be, I think everyone will start to, will truly appreciate. I think, you know, Dan Evans, you know, hopefully he can get through a few rounds. Joanna Konta just won a title in Nottingham. She went to the semi-finals a few years ago. Be interesting to see if Jack Draper is in the draw. He just beat Marcus Sinner, who's the third seed at Queens yesterday.
Interesting.
He's one for the future, Sinner. He played Nadal in probably the last 16 in the French Open. But I've seen him before. He's very, very sort of promising for the future.
Is he a classical serve volleyer?
Who's Sinner?
Yeah.
No, there are not many of those left, to be honest. He's, you know, he's big serve, big forehand, double-handed backhand. There aren't that. In fact, that's where Tsitsipas is a bit different, that he's got a single-handed backhand. Mm. They are fewer and, you know, fewer of those.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see, you know, Serena Williams must be thinking, is she 40 now or 39?
She's knocking on the doors.
She must be thinking this is probably maybe her last Wimbledon or thereabouts. So yes, it could be interesting. Let's hope we have a normal event. And I think, I don't know how much I've adjusted it for COVID, but a few years ago they made the grass court season a little bit longer. So there's more of it around to the, you know, general British public, if you like, on standard TV. So lots to see.
And lots for your great sport to embrace. And I'll tell you something, if you are just one of those people that just watches tennis and falls in love with it at Wimbledon, fantastic. But you might consider upping your game and really embracing it at Batchwood. Tell us what's happening at Batchwood, and more crucially, John, where we can learn more information.
Yeah, so if people want to sort of take up tennis, whether it's from the age of, you know, 2.5 or 3 with their mum in top tennis all the way up to people in their 60s, 70s and beyond, then it's, you know, there's an email address, which is tennis.batchwood@onelife.co.uk. Or there's the general sort of through our social media pages. So just type in Batchwood on Facebook or Instagram, any of those, and you know, directly message. But yeah, I mean, we've been open since April the 12th, I think. Yep. Gradually opening for longer and looking to increase the opening to hours to later in the coming months. And yeah, onwards and upwards, we hope, you know.
Absolutely. Once again, John, because truly, Batchwood is a wonderful facility. It offers, as you say, right from tots right through to sort of the Silverhead Brigade. Good luck to you. Get involved. It's totally inclusive. Also, by the way, if you fall in love with tennis and you find yourself finding it quite serious, they do operate almost as a kind of channel funnel up the ranks. So again, you are rubbing shoulders with elite. You're getting some great training. There's something for everybody. John, just remind us all, please, of the best way to engage with you.
Yeah, so either any of the social media pages, support Batchwood or Batchwood Tennis on Instagram, but the email address is tennis.batchwood@onelife.co.uk.
Fantastic. John Meredith, it's always a pleasure to talk tennis with you. I want to wish you a jolly good rest of this day. I look forward to picking things up with you throughout Wimbledon. And to your family as well, good luck. I know there's big things happening, bubbling away. So wishing them all well.
Tony, thanks ever so much, mate. Keep well and speak to you soon. Thanks for your time.
Take care. Thanks again.
Bye. Bye.